We'll hear argument next in number 87981, Beach Aircraft Corporation against Rainey. Number 87-1028, Beach Aerospace Services versus Rainey. Mr. Womack, you may proceed whenever you're ready.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court. These petitions respectfully ask you to consider two of the federal rules of evidence. The first is 803, having to do with the use of government reports. The second is a different rule, namely 106, concerning contemporaneous publication of documents. This, as the court will know, is essentially a codification of Dean Wigmore's completeness of formulation. Implicit in the second point, if the court please, is also a third rule, namely 801, and I say implicit because it is triggered by a footnote in the panel opinion of the 11th Circuit. With regard to 803, namely the government report rule, a moment or two, please, of background. Mid-July of 1982, a tragic accident involving the loss of a Navy trainer. Sadly, we lost the pilot and the student. The following day, the squadron commander convened separate investigations. The one in question here is the JAG investigation commenced pursuant to the Judge Advocate General's manual. Subsequently, diversity suits were filed in the Northern District of Florida, consolidated for handling, discovery, and trial, bifurcated proceedings. Trial in mid-July of 1984, and it was during that trial that I offered as an exhibit for the jury certain portions of the JAG officer's report. Historically, I think I had brought that matter to the district judge's notice several months before the trial, at least 4 months before trial. The court considered the matter. Briefs were filed. It was considered orally in a memoranda. Court ultimately concluded that of the 31 factual findings in the JAG report, that it would admit or allow me to use 4. Of the 9 conclusions or opinions contained in the JAG report, the district judge admitted 1. For convenience, I think the full text of the total report, that is, the factual findings and the conclusions, are set out in the Beach petition. And I raise this purely as a matter of clarity because the in-bank opinion and the panel opinion below both say, and I think respectfully, erroneously assume, that all of the report was admitted, and that's not correct. So if you take the joint appendix, you have what the court assumed to have been admitted, and you take the petition and you have the exact document that was admitted. Actually, after the court's ruling, I simply had it retyped so as not in the heat of trial to admit anything that the court didn't want admitted and use it as a blow-up exploded exhibit for the jury. The specific bone of contention, if I may put it that way, is a statement by the JAG officer in his conclusion that the probable cause of this tragedy was the pilot's failure to maintain proper interval. And by that, he means, of course, the violation of the distances required by pattern integrity and a touch-and-go pattern with the training squadron. At the time of the accident, parenthetically, there were 6 airplanes in the pattern immediately before. There had been 5, and when the 6th airplane entered the pattern, this tragedy occurred. Court of Appeals of my circuit, the panel took it away from me, took the verdict away from me. There was a...
The district court admitted the evidence.
Yes, sir. Yes, Your Honor. Panel reversed. There was a special concurrence by Circuit Judge Frank Johnson suggesting that the court take it in bank. We petitioned. Court recalled the panel opinion, ordered new briefs filed, and ultimately considered the case further without argument but on new briefs. The in-bank court split 6-6 on the issue whether or not the conclusion of the JAG officer classified or called, denominated, if you will, an opinion, relying, if the court please, on a borrowed case, and I say borrowed because it relied on a 5th Circuit case which had been decided prior to the creation of the 11th Circuit.
But do you concede that part of the memorandum is admissible under 803-6?
I think both parts are admissible, Your Honor. I contend.
Do all parties concede that 803-6 is applicable to at least part of the document?
803-6?
Yes. Is that the section you're relying on?
I had contended that they were admissible under Section 8.
Was there any contention that was admissible under 6?
Not to my knowledge, sir.
All right.
That section, of course, does deal with opinions.
We'll resume there at 1 o'clock, Mr. Palmer. Continue, Mr. Womack.
Mr. Chief Justice, may it please the court. Just before the recess, I had suggested that the Court of Appeals had made an erroneous assumption, and so that the court will not think that I'm making that assumption, that's what the court says in the in-bank opinion. In one of the footnotes, you'll notice that Judge Joe Flatt says that they did not have the exhibits before them. Why the appellate didn't send them up or why the court didn't call for them, I cannot tell you. I simply say that that's what he says in the opinion, and that accounts for the discrepancy in what was admitted and what the jury saw versus what the Court of Appeals thought had been put in evidence. Lastly, just before the recess, I suggested that the court had borrowed a 5th Circuit case. This, of course, is Smith versus Ithaca. And unless this court says otherwise, that is the law of our circuit as we come here today. My mission, as I understand it, is to respectfully seek your approval to use these types of conclusions or opinions. I make that request to you, provided they are trustworthy. In this case, please consider that my opponents had 4 months' notice. They filed documents with court suggesting that they wanted to challenge the trustworthiness of the JAG investigator. I agreed at the conference before the court that they might add additional witnesses if they needed to do that to challenge the trustworthiness of it. And His Honor twice indicated that he would consider any precautionary instruction which they wished to hand up. Nothing was done, no discovery was taken, no motion to continue, and no witness was called. In those circumstances,
No discovery of the circumstances under which the investigation was conducted?
None whatsoever, Your Honor. Now, it may be that in a symbolic way we as lawyers are not laying the right predicates on trustworthiness.
As I read the text of the rule, at any rate, Mr. Womack, it says, Section 8 says, certain stuff shall factual findings resulting from an investigation made pursuant to authority granted by law, unless the sources of information or other circumstances indicate lack of trustworthy. That would sound almost like the burden is on the person who wants to show that they're not trustworthy.
I submit that I make the threshold showing that it's legitimate, authentic, done in the course and scope of the officer's duties and so forth. And then if they wish to challenge it, it should shift to them. And I would be the first to encourage every precaution or every right be given them to do all of the things that they wish to challenge. The fact is, in this case, none of those things were done. If I could move to another point, please. I think that we as lawyers are not focusing on the right thing. I suggest methodology, the experience training of the investigator, the content of the reports, the intended use, perhaps, institutional bias, if that exists, probative weight, and lastly, prejudice, undue prejudice that might inure. And those things, rather than the agency or scope of employment of the government investigator, would give a more trustworthy foundation for the district judge. Moving quickly, if I may, to the generic issue, whether this court will permit us to use probable cause conclusions, I ask your approval for that use. And I ask you to consider several reasons. First, they are certainly not binding on anybody in a judicial sense. The committee recommends their use. Most of the circuits permit their use, and indeed in the Fifth and the Second Circuit, while there are cases going in both directions, they are permitted there. Most of the evidence professors say that we should be able to use them. Gaines said that's not binding on this court, obviously. But there are some very good policy reasons for doing so, quite aside from what the evidence professors might have to say. Some cases of necessity, cost. The sheer volume of paperwork generated by business and government today is just overpowering, and so I submit in the most respectful terms that we who try cases need to be able to use in some form some portions of government documents. And however strict the court might feel on trustworthiness before you allow us to use them, that's a matter for the court and not for us. But there is an overriding need for our use of these documents. In a practical sense, please consider also that if you allow a conclusion or an opinion that's probable cause and doesn't go pass the line to the fixation of liability or legal conclusions. If you just let us use probable cause, I submit to you that the district judges deal with this on a daily basis. The cautionary charges can be given almost from rote. The trial lawyers know how to handle them without any difficulty. And lastly, and I think perhaps importantly, the jurors deal with economic probabilities, mathematical probabilities, medical probabilities on a daily basis. So I submit there's nothing exotic or esoteric about allowing a fact finder to have those kinds of conclusions, provided there are ample, even stringent terms going to probabilities, to trustworthiness.
Well, we're really just not discussing this in the abstract, though, are we? I mean, it's not up to us. There is a rule that we're supposed to be following here. And what content would you give to the limitation that appears in the rule to factual findings?
Well,
if this assessment that in all probability, or it's probable that rollback was the cause, if that's a factual finding, what isn't a factual finding?
I think if the JAG officer had gone further and tried to attach liability for the accident, that would have been going too far, both as a matter of law, and it would be contrary to the JAG manual itself, which forbids such a conclusion.
Well, never mind the JAG manual, but why would that be any less a factual finding? It was probable that the cause was rollback. You say that's a factual finding, but it's probable that it was the pilot's fault would not be a factual finding.
For my part, Your Honor, I thought the JAG officer's finding in this case was a factual evaluation, but it is denominated in this report as a conclusion or opinion because the catalog, the protocol of the JAG manual requires them to be set out under certain headings. Now, if Your Honor's question, the reach of the court's question is, was this JAG officer's terminology, his verbiage in this case, consistent only with my theory of the case? The answer is no, sir. Was it compatible with the respondent's case below? The answer is yes. For 2 weeks, they litigated the case below that the airplane got from point A to point B and behaved as it did aerodynamically because of an engine problem. To be sure, I litigated with a fiber of my being pilot error, but the jury, according to their verdict, never got that far.
I think you mistake my problem. I'm not concerned whether the report calls that a conclusion or not. You can have a factual conclusion, quite possibly, which would be a factual finding.
Yes, sir.
But where do you want us to draw the line between what is a factual finding and what is not a factual?
I would ask you.
You think a finding that the pilot was negligent would not be a factual finding?
I think a finding that the pilot was negligent would be too close to a legal conclusion. I think if you give the fact finder the bit of evidence that this is a probable cause and then let them defend against that's proper.
What about the pilot failed to push the stick to the right when he should have? Would that be a factual finding?
If the JAG officer says that the probable cause was of the pilot's failure to input aileron, I think that would be a factual finding that they should be able to consider. And to answer the bottom line question of Your Honor, I would ask you to consider drawing the line, if the court chooses to draw a line, just on the other side of probabilities and just this side of legal conclusions and fixation of legal liability.
Mr. Womack, what do you think the converse of factual finding? What do you think the rulemakers meant to exclude when they said factual findings shall be admissible? Do you think it was legal conclusions?
I thought they intended to exclude legal conclusions or fixation.
What do you mean fixation?
Legal determinations of legal responsibility. And I submit to Your Honor that most of the evidence writers and most of the circuits have said that this type of conclusion, opinion, finding, or however denominated, is really a species of factual findings.
Sure, the law of evidence has been kind of confused for many years by efforts to distinguish between fact and opinion. We don't want to get into that here.
Judge Weinstein, the much-loved authority on evidence, makes the very point that the district judge should not be put in the position of drawing what he calls hair-splitting conclusions or factual evaluations. It's almost impossible to do, according to His Honor's view, and it's better to admit it under caution, under tight restraints of trustworthiness with cautionary instructions. Now, that's the majority view, but as I've said to Your Honor before, it's certainly not binding on this court.
Mr. Womack, may I ask one other question? I'm just a little unclear on part of the record. I don't recall it that well. When the judge did let in part of the report, he let in the section that says the most probable cause of the accident was the pilot's failure to maintain proper interval. That did go in, didn't it?
Yes, sir.
But he did not let in the number six, although the above sequence of events is most likely to have occurred, it does not change the possibility that a rollback did occur.
No,
am
sir.
I right in that? Why did he let, how did that happen, that only the stuff favorable to one side got in?
If I may paraphrase His Honor, he said that was a possible scenario. In other words, to his eye, a possibility was not reliable enough for him.
Would you think he was correct in that? I mean, the possibility the rollback occurred, which is consistent with the plaintiff's theory.
Justice Stevens, the entire JAG report, I wanted them all in.
Well, I would have thought that would be the right answer myself.
That's what I urged for 4 months in writing in every way that I could. His Honor did not agree with me. He considered the matter for a long period of time, ultimately changed his ruling once, and ultimately edited the report himself.
Did the plaintiff object to that editing of the report?
The plaintiff objected to the conclusion, as I recall.
Oh, I understand. He objected, of course, to number six going, or to number seven going.
Number seven, yes, sir. He did.
He didn't take a position if seven goes in, the rest ought to go in, too?
I don't think he did, Your Honor.
Puzzling.
I don't mean to speak for him, and Mr. Larry will certainly know, and you may rely on what he says.
You have a second question in your petition, as you
yes, sir.
Know,
if,
Mr.
If Your Honor, please, the next has to do with what I call the paper rule. This is 106, which says in substance that if one offers part of a document or a transcript or a letter, that type of thing, that and the adversary or opponent of the document wishes other parts offered, it must be done at that time. As I read it, it says contemporaneously. As I've indicated to you, Dean Wigmore, Professor McCormick, Judge Weinstein, and other authors interpret it that way. In this situation, the 11th Circuit, with all due respect, if their opinion stands, they have converted Rule 106 to a substantive evidence rule. And that rule would run along the theme that 106 is converted to a theme of one's case doctrine, or that one can give unqualified opinions so long as they are consistent with one's trial stance or one's trial theory.
Is it your position that Rainey could not get this document in, or that he just failed to do so in a proper way?
I think that the subject of an engine opinion, the technical opinion which he was asked, or which he tried to express, was a professional opinion. Now, if they thought that they could qualify their client as an expert, then they should have tried to lay that predicate, or perhaps put him on in their case if they wanted to, or call him in rebuttal. They could have made the effort. I would not agree that he was qualified to do that, and I make that suggestion to Your Honor because they called Dr. Craig as an aerodynamicist, and they called Mr. Hall as their engine expert.
Well, in other words, you put it on whether or not he's an expert, and your position, I take it, is simply because you ask him whether he made a statement and read from a document that you are not introducing the document.
That's ground one. And ground two, please consider that if they had questions to ask of Rainey which were related to generic question subject matter that we had opened up, then I think they could have gotten in other parts of that letter, whatever its status is hearsay. For example...
Well, isn't that what happened?
Of course,
they asked him about the document. I thought your position would be that since the document wasn't admitted, and there was no way that he either could or did ask for the document to be admitted, and that's the end of it.
Well, the Court of Appeals says what we did was tantamount to offering. I don't agree with that, but that's what the court said. And I'm bound by it, as I understand it.
Why are you bound by something the Court of Appeals?
Well, maybe that's the wrong word to use.
You're not bound by their decision. You're petitioning for certiorari and asking us to reverse it.
Yes. I thought that the use of the letter, if at all, if I may put it that way, must have been invoked at that time, triggered at that time, and had to be related to the subject matter which we had opened up.
Thank you.
I did not think that you could change subject matter or bring in new subject matter, much less professional opinions about spool turbines.
Well, is it your opinion that if he had asked for the admission of the letter at that time, when you first brought the letter in, that the trial judge would have had to admit the letter? I want to know the answer to that.
Yes, sir. If he had triggered 106 and told the trial judge at that time that he was doing that, then the court would have taken the letter, looked at what we asked, then looked at what was said, and made a ruling based on 106. But
you're telling us that the ruling would have been that it should be admitted?
If it was germane to the subject matters opened up.
Well, your argument, Mr. Womack, as I understand your brief, is that Rule 106 is inapplicable anyway because he never mentioned it or raised it, isn't it? Have you abandoned that argument?
No, sir, I have not. The first citing of 106 was in the post-trial motions, and I'm saying to the court that that's not timely.
Mm-hmm.
It's too late. You ought to be required to warn the district judge so that he can compare and make a reasoned ruling, not catch him by surprise on post-trial motions.
To get more specific, as I understand it, the writing, you didn't introduce the writing.
No, Your Honor.
You just read from it.
No, Your Honor. I can't envision any circumstance under which I would put an adversary's investigatory letter in evidence.
Well, then how could he have raised 106? Do you concede that 106 does not require that the writing or recorded statement be introduced in evidence?
In my awkwardness, I'm not getting my point across, and that's my fault. I didn't think that 106 was usable at all under the circumstances.
Because you didn't introduce the document itself. I just read from it.
That's right. But the Court of Appeals says that my point is not well taken. Now, if you assume that I am wrong, and if they were going to allow its use as a 106 proposition, then you'd have to be. If I had any time, I'd like to reserve it, John.
Very well, Mr. Womack. Mr. Larry, now we'll hear from you.
Mr. Chief Justice, may it please the court. Rule 803.8c has been variously described by the courts in these ways. First and foremost, as a mighty litigation tool. And I believe that the issue before this court is for it to decide how mighty will be the litigation tool found in 803.8c. It has been termed by the advisory committee as a controversial rule. It has been called by courts a complex rule. And how to interpret factual findings was obviously, as the brief set forth, a matter on which the House and the Senate could not agree. The point of Rainey and Knowlton at this proceeding is that while that rule was intended to make available to the jury factual findings that could be helpful to that jury that were reached by an investigator in the course of an investigation, that rule was never intended by the framers to permit the garden variety, pure expert opinion that normally comes in through witnesses who are qualified as experts, who are revealed in the discovery process as experts, who are routinely deposed prior to trial as experts, and who must be qualified by the court
Mr.
as experts.
Mr. Larry, I guess some courts, in applying the rule, have read it to mean that so long as an official report contains some factual findings, that then the entire report is admissible, unless it is lacking in trustworthiness.
Justice,
some courts have taken that view, I take it.
Justice O'Connor, the only case that I know of, other than Judge Choflat, who wrote a concurring opinion in this case, that discussed that at all was Zenith v. Mashushita. And it may have been discussed in others, but my recollection is that what the court there said was that one could read it that way.
And one could, I guess, read it that way.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, Justice. However, the court goes on in the same case to say, however, it appears clear that what was intended was to only admit them to the extent of their factual findings. And that's the construction that we urge here.
But aren't we then just embroiled in the traditional distinction of 50 or 60 years ago, the difference between fact and opinion?
Justice Rehnquist, I believe that this court, and I believe that courts, can see a difference and can distinguish between what an investigator finds as a fact, based upon his evaluation of evidence, and what is pure opinion.
Anyone trained as a lawyer will be able to see things at either end of that spectrum. But the difficulties come in the middle, where very competent trial judges, very competent lawyers may see things differently. And do we want reversals of trials because the trial judge saw it one way or the other rather than the other in the middle of the spectrum?
Your Honor, what we want is for the trial judge to make a determination as to whether the report qualifies under the rule, and not simply let the entire report in just because in some cases it may be difficult to distinguish between opinion and fact. I think what we have here is a rule that carefully used words, findings of fact, and never used the word opinion in any of the advisory committee notes.
Would you settle for the trial judge setting up, these are my findings of fact, A, B, C, D, E, the rest are opinion?
Well, I think the judge, when the report is offered, has to decide whether the report sets forth more than findings of fact. And the cases and the advisory committee notes do offer a helpful guide to the judge in determining the kind of finding of fact that was envisioned by the framers. The advisory committee note to Rule 8036, and this gets into, of course, the analysis of Smith v. Ithaca, but it's relevant to your point, Judge, Justice. 8036 recognized that prior to the Federal Rules of Evidence, opinions simply didn't come in most courts, or at least in many federal courts. And they took care in the note to say, because we recognize that courts have turned away records to the extent of their opinions, we want it to be specifically clear here that opinions and diagnoses are included. Moving on to 8038C, the very same hearsay exception, but a slightly different subdivision, they recognize, again, evaluative reports have become controversial. Yet they never reach the point of saying, and we simply want to open up the door to all opinion. What they do is analyze the kinds of evaluative reports that statutorily had been permitted. For example, Secretary of Agriculture findings as to the true grade of grain, recognizing that kind of an opinion by the Secretary, or that kind of a statement by the Secretary, to some extent involves some conclusory process. A finding or a certificate that a ship was sanitary enough to accept a cargo of beans, admissible under statute. Far different from a probable cause opinion, nevertheless slightly more than simply factual. And the advisory committee looks to those statutory exceptions and says, this is our helpful guide in deciding the kinds of reports we think ought to be admitted. And they call them evaluative findings or evaluative reports.
Where in the briefs is the advisory committee language that you're referring to? If you don't know, don't.
Your Honor, I have the advisory committee note in front of me.
Well, it would help. What I would like to do is get it in front of me.
Your Honor, I don't have it, the page handy. I'm sorry.
Okay.
The JAG investigator was bound by a JAG manual, which coincidentally required him to reach findings of fact separately from opinions and conclusions. And interestingly also, it defined a finding of fact as the investigator's evaluation of evidence, but not his opinion or his inference as to what all of the evidence might mean, in this case in terms of causation. The JAG manual, by its terms, contemplates that the findings of fact will be evaluative, but takes care to separate that from opinion. I think that if the court examines the JAG investigation in this case, it well illustrates the distinction between the kinds of findings that this advisory committee intended and the opinions which we contend this court should not permit to become a tool for litigators. And in the report, a lot of historical facts are recited. For example, the date, the time, and the place of the accident. Facts with which there is no evaluation process at all. He then moves on to such things as, was the weather a factor? And as a factual finding, concludes because the winds and the temperatures and all were not out of the ordinary, that for a pilot, weather couldn't have been a factor. And he makes it a finding of fact. He doesn't say it's my opinion, but it's possible it was. He simply says, factually, weather wasn't a factor. He goes on to say that
is his degree of certainty what determines it? I mean, suppose he had said, well, actually, it's a close question whether the weather had any effect or not. The winds were almost at the level where they might have had an effect, and the clouds were almost low enough. But in my opinion, it wasn't a factor. Then that would no longer be a factual finding.
In that sense, he is telling the reader of his report that it simply isn't a factual finding of his.
But it seems to me he's done the same thing in both situations. It's only his opinion in both situations. In one case, he's more certain than he is in the other. But it's obviously just his judgment in each case, isn't it?
It is true that when an investigator makes a finding or an evaluation-type factual determination, he is injecting a judgment process, which is involved in opinions and becomes more and more involved the more you get into the kind of opinion that was admitted here.
Right.
Suppose
in the clear case that you first posited, where it's just clear that the weather wasn't affected, he had simply expressed himself by saying, it is my firm opinion that weather was not a factor. Would that be a factual finding?
The court could very well determine that though he called it an opinion, he simply made a finding of fact. I don't think we can turn on what the investigator calls it.
I hope not, but I don't know what we're turning on if we're not turning on that. What are we turning
what
on?
What I'm suggesting to the court is that as the advisory committee evaluated or reviewed the kinds of reports that had been previously admitted by statute and still were preserved, that this was the kind of report that may contain some conclusory, may tend towards the conclusory, but which nevertheless is the investigator's statement of fact that that's what it was. And the case of Zenith v. Mashashita, which was cited in all the briefs, makes that statement, that factual findings is a term broad enough to encompass any statement of fact that represents a conclusion on the part of the investigator. Now, Lieutenant Commander Morgan, after going beyond the findings of fact, then lists his opinions and makes it clear in his scenario of the opinions that it is impossible for him to know for a fact how the accident happened, why it happened. if I may quote from number 5, because both pilots were killed in the crash, and because of the nearly total destruction of the aircraft by fire, it is impossible, almost impossible, to determine exactly what happened. He goes on to engage in what he calls a possible scenario, which is what he later calls his probable cause opinion. He sets up the scenario that the pilot, surprised by the presence of another aircraft, made a hard right turn that put the aircraft in stall. Then goes on to say the most probable cause was just that possible scenario that I've recited, and states also, I can't rule out the possibility that rollback occurred. And to address the question that was raised during Beach's presentation, the judge initially ruled and had ruled in his pretrial order up until the day after jury selection and the day before the first witness that only what Lieutenant Commander Morgan had called were his factual findings would come into evidence. And he said that opinions would have no place in the courtroom. Then he reversed that. And as Beach pointed out, we were given the opportunity for that short period of time to try to do what we could to attack trustworthiness, which we had made clear we thought was an issue with respect to opinions. And he stated, I will not allow all opinions in, only to the extent they're couched in the terms of probability. Because in Florida, and I think in other states, experts are not entitled to opine on what they possibly would think possibly could have happened, only what they think probably happened.
In your view, Mr. Larry, does the admissibility of opinion in the survey report turn upon whether it's trustworthy or not? Or even if it's very trustworthy, is it nonetheless not admissible?
Justice Rehnquist, our contention is that before trustworthiness is ever reached as an issue, the factual findings have to meet the requirements of the rule. And that unless it is determined that what is offered is a factual finding, you never get the trustworthiness. With respect to attacking the opinions, I would like to point out some time was taken in pointing out the various purposes that are served by allowing investigative findings of fact into evidence, and the suggestion that our contention would somehow disserve those policy reasons for allowing the report. One of the reasons given that these reports should be admissible is because the officer who does it comes on the scene early. That purpose is nowhere offended by our position. Other investigators hired by the parties are partial. No quarrel with that. The investigator, by the time of trial, may have a dim recollection of what he did. Again, no quarrel with that. His factual findings, to the extent they're factual, will still be there for them to come into evidence in lieu of his dim recollection. Points the cases and the commentators point to the fact that the investigator can interview witnesses before the parties have pulled them to one side or another. Again, that doesn't offend his findings of fact. It simply says that that's why this investigator's findings may be something that we should admit. And oftentimes the officer is trained in doing this kind of investigation. But none of these purposes speak to and encourage that this factual findings language should be extended to include all opinion and simply leave it up to the opponent to say, well, the opinion's not trustworthy. I think the wording has to have some meaning other than everything in the world of opinion comes in.
May I ask you a question, Mr. Larry? Do you am I correct in understanding you place a great deal of emphasis on how the author of the report characterizes the material in the report? The fact that he calls something a possibility and another thing a probability makes a big difference. Or the fact that he calls something a finding of fact and something else he calls an opinion. Am I correct?
You're not completely correct in that point. I am saying in this case that Lieutenant Commander Morgan took care to place certain things in his findings of fact section, but I don't believe that this court should adopt a rule that draws a bright line that is determined by what the investigator calls it.
See,
because the investigator here could have said, I find as a fact that Lieutenant Commander Rainey stalled this aircraft and caused her own death.
But one of the things that puzzles me is that the judge left out all the parts of the possible scenario in paragraph 5, A, B, C, D, and E. And of course, if it's just a possibility, maybe it's just opinion, shouldn't go in. But some of the facts that are described in that possible scenario are really quite factual. I mean, some of it that the airplane entered the pattern with a certain person at the controls, and I guess, you know, some of the things you would really consider to be factual, even though the whole picture is a possible scenario.
Well, the judge found in that case, and we agreed with him, that there wasn't really any way for that investigator to know a lot of those things that he was talking about were possible. Whether the student overpowered the instructor or whether the...
No, but for example, whether the student could have obstructed the visibility of the instructor in certain attitudes and the like, those are fairly factual, I would think.
Well, there weren't any... If I'm not mistaken, there were no factual findings in those respects. I believe that's why the court felt that that was simply too much of a possible scenario for him to say that comes in. But interestingly enough, once the Lieutenant Commander Morgan stopped calling it a possible scenario and then called it his probable cause opinion, then that came in.
Well, that's right. And it seems to me it is a matter of fact. One could easily say it's a matter of fact that there is a possibility that a rollback occurred. I mean, in other words, that does not rule out that one possibility. I don't know
what the line is. If that expert had been on the stand, and I could have asked him, sir, you have to agree with me, don't you, that you can't rule out that rollback happened. Now, that's something that would occur in a courtroom. But the court was unwilling to do anything except allow, once he decided opinions would come in, to allow anything but probable cause, probability opinions. Because no more than I could put an expert on the stand and ask the expert what his opinion as to the possibility of the cause was. I don't think I'd be permitted to do that. That's impeachment kind of questioning, but it's not what you could do on direct.
All probable opinions can get in that? Is that the line you're drawing, so on?
Your Honor, that's the line that the judge drew as to why that opinion would come in and not the possible scenarios.
I see. And you wouldn't allow any opinion to come in?
He did allow opinion to come in.
I see. You would not allow any opinion to come in?
That's correct, Justice Scalia.
And you define opinion as...
I would ask the parties to bring the experts who want to express those opinions to the courtroom.
What do you do with something like, I have a report that said, makes a finding that the brake was applied, the brakes were applied 200 feet before the impact in an automobile accident.
If that was based upon a skid mark,
yes, it was
200 feet long,
right,
then you've entered into the realm of where an investigator can tend toward the conclusory but still establish it as a fact. If he can establish that the skid mark belonged to that automobile, it's what one of the cases talks about as the kind of a conclusion that all persons skilled in the art would likely agree with. I believe that was the language from Scogin. When you get into the causation issues like we have here, where nobody knows the cause, and the opinions of experts go both ways, and where the evidence is much of it is destroyed in the sense that the aircraft burns up, you can't have the kind of opinions that this court or any trial judge could say this is the kind of opinion all persons skilled would likely agree with. Mm-hmm. I think the advisory committee intended to encompass that, maybe that much, but stay clear of saying that this kind of garden variety expert opinion that we take great pains.
What if you seek or you offer into evidence a weather forecast? They predict for the next 24 hours high winds and heavy rain. Is that admissible under this section?
That would not be a factual finding reached by an investigator pursuant to law. That wouldn't come under 8038C.
So you say that doesn't depend on an opinion at all because it's that kind of
that's
opinion
a
is not governed by this.
Well, 8038C speaks only to reports of investigations containing factual findings, and I don't think that that's what that would be.
Of course, what you're trying to do in your lawsuit is to prove the cause.
That's correct, yes.
Of the accident. So is it all that difficult? I guess it is.
Is it all that difficult to prove the cause?
It's not impossible, or you wouldn't have brought the lawsuit.
That's correct. But it becomes a matter of very hotly contested expert opinion, as this record amply demonstrates.
Yes?
It was a very, very, and the sole issue, really, for the jury, whether you call it a legal conclusion.
Because experts differ, is some reason for not allowing in this report?
I'm sorry, I missed the first part.
The fact that experts may differ, is that a reason for not allowing this report in?
Your Honor, the reason for not allowing this report in is because this opinion, not the findings of fact, is because it's not a finding of fact, and the investigator signaled that.
Your submission is that if somebody makes a finding of cause, that's opinion.
if it goes beyond a normative, if it goes beyond...
Well, the investigator around looks at the evidence available to him and says the cause of this accident was pilot error.
That's opinion and doesn't come in under this rule.
That's it. So
our contention.
What if you're wrong? What if you say that cause is a finding of fact? Then it's in under the...
Well, if the investigator calls cause a finding of fact, I don't think that changes that it is...
No. So you say that kind of a statement by an expert after examining a crash, it always must be considered an opinion.
Well, I think that's true. It would
yes,
be.
Yes, all right.
Well, you wouldn't say that if you apply the test you gave me earlier, whether everybody would reach that conclusion. Suppose the investigator based that conclusion upon the fact that he had an eyewitness who was in the cockpit who said that the pilot hit the stick with his elbow accidentally, causing the plane to swerve and crash. Based it on the live testimony of someone who was in the cockpit. There'd be no doubt. Every reasonable person would say that cause was pilot error.
In your example, I think that I would differ with that because I don't think that part would be enough to answer the whole question. But I agree with Your Honor. There are cases in which it could be established as a fact. For example, in a case of a shooting death, one could conclude as a fact that death resulted from a bullet wound in the heart.
Why isn't that opinion?
Well, it is. That again gets into that area that is called the kind of conclusion that all persons similarly skilled would reach. It is a very apparent to the people skilled in the art of forensics and medical examiner training would agree on. But
and so if they agree on it, it's not opinion. Is that your point?
Your Honor, I'm making two points. First, under Smith v. Ithaca, which is a very strict construction approach which we urge on this court, any opinion doesn't come in. The second point, which has become, I've allowed it to become kind of confused, and I apologize, is that even if you adopt the Senate view, the advisory committee view, that evaluated reports come in, that they even suggest there should be some limit on the kind of opinion, call it opinion, that should come in as a factual finding. And that's why I pointed the court to the kinds of things the advisory committee said should be a helpful guide, and they talk about some very easy to resolve questions of would this be the kind of thing that anyone would really disagree with is what I suggest. And if they had intended for this rule to be a vehicle to place in this kind of opinion, pure opinion, then I think that they should have said that, and I think that this court, as the Supreme Court of this land, ought to be cautious in, by implication of a rule or a statute, extending it to the point that very important rights of cross-examination are cut off. And that's what Beach is urging this court to do, is to take this rule...
You could have deposed this fellow. You could have called him as an adverse witness.
Your Honor, the only choice we had to do that was to seek a continuance. We did not do that, and for that reason we cannot here complain that we're entitled to a new trial because we were surprised.
You can't really complain that your right of cross-examination was cut off.
Well, Your Honor, even under this rule, if I had deposed him, I still can't cross-examine him in front of the jury. I can cross-examine him in the deposition. But just because I've taken his deposition doesn't prevent Beach from bringing that report in and just simply putting it in. And before that jury, I may not cross-examine it. I have to read a deposition that I took in Iowa or someplace some months before the trial. Now, we readily concede that if we thought surprise entitled us to a new trial, we forgave that right, forwent that right. But I made some discussion in the briefs addressing the circumstances under which this change in ruling was announced in order to draw attention to the fact that we never conceded that the opinions were trustworthy. We didn't sit around not caring whether they came in. We had a ruling from a federal district judge in writing saying they wouldn't come in, and granted, Beach continued to press the point. We didn't anticipate the judge would change the ruling. That's, again, not mentioned to say we are entitled to a trial for that reason, but to let this court know and not be under the mistaken assumption that we simply conceded it and now complain about it. That is not the case, and the joint appendix it contains the transcript of the hearing before the judge when he did change his mind, and we made it clear, Mr. Partington made it clear in that hearing, that we did not concede the trustworthiness of those opinions.
But
we
on what basis did you want plaintiff's letter in?
Your Honor, the letter we wanted in because Beach had introduced Rainey's letter.
Now, had they? They had questions about the letter.
They introduced the letter, not the document, but by the verbatim reading from it, with the letter in front of him, saying, Mr. Rainey, did you not say as follows? Reading verbatim what he said.
Reading verbatim from the letter or the document?
From the letter, the document itself.
Well, is there a separate document, or when you say the document, are you referring to the letter?
I'm referring to the letter. The letter was part of the JAG composite. All the enclosures included that Lieutenant Commander Rainey had written to the JAG a letter concerning what his investigation, though not an eyewitness.
And you want us to say that when a counsel reads from a document and asks the witness if he made the statement, that that's introducing the document?
Yes, Your Honor. I do ask you to say that because, in effect, what they did was avoid putting it in by reading it. But it came to the jury with the very same wording that was in the letter. And all we asked to do immediately following that on redirect was to say, you've been asked these questions that and we didn't say these words, but supported Beach's theory of the case. Did you not also say in your letter, and I began to read verbatim from that.
So you didn't ask for it to be introduced either.
I asked for the opportunity to read it in the same way Beach had done.
But not to put the letter in. And I gather also not ever referring, for the benefit of the trial court, to Rule 106.
Your Honor, I never mentioned the rule to the judge. But he had the benefit of my thinking, which really went to the substance of 106. What I said to the judge was, Your Honor, he has had the ability, and this is at page 77 of the Joint Appendix. Mr. Toothman for Beach said, I object to him arguing. I said to the judge, may I be heard on this? Court said, yes, sir, go ahead. Whereupon I said, on the basis that this letter constitutes an admission by Commander Rainey, he has been asked to answer every single question Mr. Toothman had respecting. And then I was then cut off by the judge.
Well, but surely there are countless rules of evidence by number. You can't think that a statement like that is like saying this should come in under Rule 106.
Your Honor, it is true that I didn't use those words, and I don't believe that the prevailing authority requires that at that time I cite a rule of evidence. I think what it requires is that I make known to, under 103, make known to the judge what the substance of the testimony I want to elicit from the witness is. That the 11th Circuit found I did by the way in which the question was framed.
What are you referring to as the prevailing authority, a case from this court?
Your Honor, no. There are a number of cases cited in the briefs going to the 106 issue, and the only case that I found that held that the party not only had to tell the judge what the substance was, but also why, whether a specific rule had to be mentioned, was the case of Tate versus Robbins and Myers, which is a First Circuit case in 1986, found at 709 F. 2nd 10. And that was the only case that I found cited that
thank
required
you, Mr. Larry. Your time has expired. Mr. Womack, you have 2 minutes remaining.
With the court's permission, I made the decision to call Mr. John Rainey as an adverse party since he had not testified at all, call for the purpose of getting him to make admissions against interest, which I thought were contained in the letter which he had written. The witness was shown two documents. One was a statement from a Marine captain named Guthrie. The other was the letter which he, Mr. Rainey, had written and which he and Mrs. Knowlton had signed. That is the one that's in issue.
Well, you objected to the jury hearing
the statement by Rainey that he didn't think it was pilot error.
I objected to his making the statement that the cause of the accident was rollback, which
yes.
is a technical
and
problem.
Not pilot error.
Yes, sir.
And why did you object to that?
Why did I object to it?
Mm-hmm.
Because he was not qualified.
So he's not qualified as an expert? Is that it?
Yes, sir. No, he was not qualified.
And but the investigator, JAG investigator, was an expert.
That comes in under a separate route, if I may put it that
yes.
way, under the rule as we understood it.
Uh-huh.
But you don't take a lay witness and get them to fall into the
but
same.
But why did he have category. To be an expert? Why did he have to be an expert to testify as to a fact?
Because the engine testimony,
rather than an opinion. Was this opinion you were objecting to?
Opinion, yes, sir.
You mean this was the cause? His statement about the cause of the accident was an opinion?
Yes, sir.
Just like that was in the JAG expert, it was an opinion, not a
yes,
fact.
Yes, Your Honor, but one was a qualified under the rule, and one was not, in my judgment.
Thank you, Mr. Womack. The case is submitted. Yeah.